Hello and welcome to AuthorsAudio.com. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele, and in this site, we interview all kinds of authors from around the world. If you're an author marketing a book, please come to our website at www.authorsaudio.com and fill in an interview application, and we can get back to you shortly. As for the many millions of readers out there, come and listen and offer up your ideas or opinions on the program. We're always interested in your comments on our guests or guests that you would like us to have. Now, David W. Powell enlisted for a tour of duty in April 1966 with the U.S. Marines. He believed he would be used for his considerable skills as a computer programmer. He never thought all the Marines would see in his resume was his karate expertise. He did end up serving as a rocket man in the jungles of Da Nang and Chu Lai for a 13-month stay in Vietnam. However, perhaps David Powell's biggest battle came after he arrived back in the U.S. in late 1967. David's struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder was to occupy the better part of an arduous 20 years of recovery as he tried to leave the horror of war behind and relate again to a normal civilian life. My Tour in Hell is the book about this struggle. For any of you out there who have loved ones or friends stationed in Iraq or Afghanistan or in other war zones, this is most definitely a book for you. I'd like to invite Mr. David Powell to our program. David, how are you?
Hello, Jake. Thanks so much for the intro.
Thank you. Well, I tell you, I think your book is going to be very prescient for so many people who today are in Iraq and Afghanistan and in other places putting their lives on the line just as you did, like it's almost 40 years ago.
Almost 40 years, yep. But it seems relevant today.
It's just as relevant today. And so we're going to go walk you through a little bit about this, but what inspired you to write your book after almost 40 years after the experience that you had in Vietnam? What was that all about?
The most overriding reason for me going from mind to paper, Jake, was seeing the boys and girls come back to a limp shake homecoming and the same cold reception that I and fellow combatants experienced some four decades ago.
Yes,
I wanted to be a voice so that they would not be afraid to speak their own story.
Exactly.
That's it in essence.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we wouldn't be stretching it too far to say that your experience in Vietnam or a soldier's experience in the Second World War or a soldier's experience in Iraq, it's war. It's all war.
Right. Your country asks you to do something extraordinary, and if you were brought up like I was to be a respectful, patriot-loving child, you do what you're asked to do to help others and to the exclusion of your own self or your life. And there's no great honor in it, but there is purpose of duty.
I think the essence of your book, though, is about, in the underlying area of it, is that human beings... Do you think that human beings really were, in a sense, designed emotionally for the kind of things that a Marine sees in war?
Absolutely not. I don't think, short of sharing a personal experience one-on-one with another, there's any way to prepare someone for risk of life or death at any instant. And I was that unprepared.
I think that to get inside that world through your head is, you know, it's something that everyone should at least acknowledge.
I agree. I think that, and again, Jake, this is why I wrote the book, is to have a look at something that isn't spoken about, to discuss mortal fear and try and put it in a language that others would understand that had not been in that same place. Challenging, and I hope that I reach at least one person who will come forward and get the help that they need.
Now, your story is very interesting. You detail this well in the book, and you talk about your job is it an M20 rocket launcher that you used?
3.5 inch rocket launcher, which in more common terms is known as a bazooka.
Okay, a bazooka.
Yeah. Right.
And you talked about those M16s that kept on jamming up on you.
That was a horrible experience. They gave us...
Yeah, that's what you don't want, is an M16 jamming up on you.
No, you don't want anything jamming up but a brand new gun. That really got my ire.
When you're out there, the last thing you want is an equipment failure.
Exactly. When you've got nothing to turn to, including your fellow combatant on your left or your right, you're left with your weapons and your own prowess. And when your weapon fails, you're really alone.
Boy, I can really appreciate that. What do I do now? Or, you know, how do I respond to this?
From my perspective, there was no time to make a calculated decision. It was pure reaction. And it was mortal in nature. If you did it wrong, you lost. And losing was the ultimate. You were either shot and wounded, or shot and killed, or blown up by a mine or booby trap. Mm-hmm. I think in essence what I'd like to say is that it was a 24-hour-a-day suspense novel with dire outcomes. There was no real friends and no safe space. All I had was my faith and the condition of my equipment to get me through that.
You get you through the day, right? You know, Richard, you quote this in your book. You say, Richard M. Nixon wrote, "No event in American history is more misunderstood than the Vietnam War. It was misreported then, and it is misremembered now. Rarely have so many people been so wrong about so much. Never have the consequences of their misunderstanding been so tragic." What do you think he meant about that?
I think he was speaking about the way the country disrespected the returning veteran,
okay,
rather than the way they say things now. We love our soldiers. We love our troops. We're against the concept of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes.
That wasn't said in Vietnam. When I returned, I was not a patriot like I thought. I was treated as an immoral villain, someone that would do vile things for my own gain, rather than having served my country,
yes,
to keep the war in another land instead of our own.
Mm-hmm.
Very heartbreaking.
Yes, so you thought that your efforts in putting your life on the line was not appreciated by the American people in general.
Exactly right.
You were being discarded, really.
Yes, sir, absolutely. When I returned, it was in November of 1967, and people that want to refer to the history of the United States and their attitudes about Vietnam need only look at 1968 as probably the most vile year of treatment to our servicemen and women. And that was a great signal for me, Jake, that it was dangerous for me to have been a veteran. let alone a combat veteran, and live in this United States. So I immediately suppressed and repressed everything I had gone through.
I can understand why. I can understand why. You actually earned a Purple Heart, correct?
Yes, I was awarded the Purple Heart for having been shot in a daylight ambush by Viet Cong.
Sorry, go ahead.
They did give me the Purple Heart, and I guess any recipient of it, the Purple Heart, has some pride, but it's really, you made a mistake and you got hit. So it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag because, you know, I would imagine that any soldier who lost some of his mates out in the battlefield would, receiving any honor, would tend to receive it in their honor, really.
Yes,
is
sir.
Is that what you feel?
That's nicely put, and yes, it is. I've got, I think, 11 different awards and citations.
Wow.
And the only reason I wear them, like on the 4th of July, is to say, thank you, mate, for what you gave. Not look at me, what I did. It's thank you, mate, for what you did.
I can only try to imagine the sadness of losing in death someone who you had become so close to in life, at the very peak of life, and sharing the same adrenaline, actually, you know. That must be a thing.
The same adrenaline, the same age, the same circumstances, the same food, the same tent, the same hours of awake and sleep. It's for me, it was like losing a piece of me, not losing a relative or a close friend. It was a loss of body and soul.
I'd like to get around a little bit now to you were finally discharged, I think, around April of 68. Would that be right?
Indeed.
Okay. So now a lot of people are saying, well, David, you know, you got through that one. You made it through. Did you suffer any physical injuries from that war?
A scar which has since left my chest, where I got the Purple Heart Award. No, the scars were internal, very physically able. In fact, after I returned, I immediately resumed my karate training and earned a black belt within 6 months of getting out of active duty.
You were a major dude after that. You were a black belt.
Yeah, I was pretty angry.
So you were in the trumped up fast course to get that black belt.
Yeah, there was.
You know, and go ahead.
Most of the guys wouldn't want to spar with me after I returned, because.
Well, it certainly is one way to direct energy into a formal kind of an exercise. But even after doing that, I know that you were also schooled as a programmer way back in the days before a lot of people were, really, I think I recall. And when you came back from your duty, you... You spent a lot of time trying to get back into your life, get back into your business aspirations, and that was difficult.
Primarily because at the time the computers were evolving so rapidly that, having stepped away from it for 2 years, I was at least 4 years out of date. And the catch-up was incredibly stressful, which I think added to my mental dismay. Eventually, I did recapture my vocation and did fairly well at it, ending up as an executive vice president of a consulting services company. Yeah, but...
Excellent, yeah. It was a long way, a long winding road to getting to emotional and financial stability.
You're exactly right.
Because this period in the book, David goes very much into detail about his struggles with everything from alcohol and problems with his intimate relationships and problems with trying to stay with a job, and this was all, there was something behind that, and this was this very unsettling issue that we call post-traumatic stress disorder. And but initially I believe you went to the VA, you went to some meetings with the VA to try to understand your pain.
Yes, I did. It was not until 1986 that I sought help from the VA.
That's a long time.
Yes, it was. In 1967, I returned from combat. It wasn't until 1980. That the American Psychiatric Association even recognized post-traumatic stress disorder as a malady. So there was, my first 13 years, there was absolutely no resource to turn to. And by 1980, I was disinterested in trying to get help. And by 1986, I had hit the bottom emotionally, and turned to them out of nowhere else to go. They failed me.
In those days, I mean, even 20 years after your tour of duty, there was almost no real program to help vets, and you obviously weren't the only one, to help vets get themselves together emotionally from the horrible things that they had seen and the horrible job they had to do in Vietnam. It was a long time.
It was a long time to wait. And speaking just personally, the recall was physically and emotionally total in nature. It wasn't a memory, Jake. I re-experienced what came to mind, physically and emotionally. I would sweat. I would know what time of day it was when something had happened. Very incredible. And found empathy, but no help from the VA.
They weren't really set up for that, and they. They didn't, I guess they didn't put as much weight on the psychological manifestations of warriors coming out of battle that they should
have.
I agree,
they did not. And then, thank you.
Go ahead, Dave.
It wasn't just true of Vietnam. In returning combat veterans in World War II, it was called shell shock and war fatigue. And They just didn't have any idea how devastating returning to civilian life would be after you have been in mortal combat for months and years. Just impossible for them to grasp.
Well, I can't imagine anybody that I know going into mortal combat for a year, knowing that at any minute in that year that your life could be totally cut off, or you could see your friend being blown up beside you. And how do you handle that?
I guess the reality is you don't handle it in that environment. You wait until you're in a safe, secure, loving, non-judgmental environment, and you can let it go. You can cry. Nice. You can tell people you're afraid of dying. You can say things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But any other environment, that is not so.
I know you struggled for so long, and then you were in touch with people, a doctor, I believe, or two doctors that were running a program called Traumatic Incident Reduction, or TIR.
Right.
And that seemed to really change your whole progress. It really turned you around.
Yes, it did. The doctor was a noted psychiatrist, still living, named Gurbody.
Dr. Gurbody?
Right.
Gurbody.
And the person who did the most intimate work with me one-on-one was a man named Gerald French. Not a degree doctor, but very competent facilitator. And he helped me get through many hours, 15, 20 hours of trauma to an end point.
Yes. Can you explain to our audience a little bit about how TIR works? Because you say it's not really a psychology-based thing. It's more of a communication-based technique. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. I can try to give you a bird's-eye view of it. It is Gerald French and I sitting in a room with a specific incident in mind that I wanted to go over. I wanted to look at it closely so that I could completely understand what really happened to me. And I preface that by saying, when I was in a traumatic incident, many things were memorized, but they weren't recorded in my conscious memory. They were in my subconscious memory. And until I was given the opportunity to completely and fully reflect on the incident, it still had that unknown, bothersome nature to it. TIR, Traumatic Incident Reduction, is the process of removing all of the charge associated with a specific incident. And in my case, the charge was recalling the incident fully, if that helps.
Yes. You have a whole few pages in the book where you give an instance of something, and then you write in below that your interpretation of what that was for you at that time.
Right.
Your interpretation of what really happened was extremely off base, based on the charge that you had with that incident, right? Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, my mind reconstituted what was true and false, and it was an incorrect assumption.
There's one here, for example, it says, I watched two Marines trying to break open the skull of a dead Viet Cong with a large rock. And underneath you put this label was about underperformance, and I felt that this kind of behavior would be replicated on me if I failed at a task or assignment. That's quite a turnaround from, you know?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It was a very good thing to have gotten rid
yeah.
of.
And by doing this exercise, however, you started to get in touch with, I guess it was the reality of your situation, and the creepy crawlies or the manifestations started to go away a little bit.
They did, and with every clarity. There was a calm that came over me that allowed me to really look at situations that were previously threatening and re-examine them as merely a confrontation, not a mortal threat.
Mm-hmm. What is available today for vets, and what would you recommend that the vets seek out for this kind of thing?
Initially, I'd recommend that they seek recognition by the Veterans Administration, mm-hmm, that they have a claim for disability for psychological wound. Then I would suggest that they seek any external source of psychological help that they believe will help them. In my case, I suggest to any of them to find a traumatic incident reduction facilitator or practitioner and do what I did. The speed of recovery is incredible, and the thoroughness of it is long-lasting. It is also drug-free. Okay, so I would say, kids, don't be embarrassed about how you feel. Go get help. Nobody thinks you're wrong. Everybody thinks you've been hurt. Get help.
David's book is called My Tour in Hell. It's David W. Powell. You can go to authorsaudio.com and click through on his on the site there to get a book at Amazon, or you can go to other locations. Is there another location, David, that people could go to get the book?
There's Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble?
There's Amazon. They may find a copy on eBay.
Okay. And you also have a webpage. Do you have a webpage yourself?
Yes, I do. It's the three W's, and then it's all one word, mytourinhell.com.
Right.
And they can order the book from there as well.
Yeah, they can order the book from there. But I really feel that, oddly enough, David wouldn't have known this in 1967, that his experience in the Vietnam War and his struggle to understand what it was like to come back from that war could very well be helping future generations.
Yes, and you can figure at least 15 to 30% of them are going through unimaginable anguish.
Is there an email where anyone can contact you if they want to maybe get some further information, or do you have anything like that?
I do. I have a personal email.
Okay.
And it is DWP.
DWP.
85750.
Okay.
At comcast.net. That's
comcast.
My personal email.
Okay, so just read that. Just read that one more time.
DWP 885750 at comcast.net.
Thank you.
All things welcomed.
Well, I appreciate you taking your time, David, to be with us today and to share your hard-won experiences.
It's been my joy. You've been a wonderful host. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And I will just tell the audience that our bumper music play-in is by George Woods. It's called Crossing Over. And it's actually what they call a PodSafe music format. So you can look at more George Wood's instrumentals at www.podsafeaudio.com. And with that, I'm going to say, David, it's been a great pleasure speaking with you.
Jake, the same to you.
And I wish you and your all just the very best. And
thank you.
Hopefully maybe we'll catch up with each other down the road, okay?
Lovely.
Okay,
thank you.
David. Thank you so much. Take care. David W. Powell.